At Sierra, discover top workout gear at incredible prices, which might lead to another discovery. Your headphones haven't been connected this whole time. Awkward. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans, send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th, and never miss a meme or milestone, all protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Checking off the boxes on your to-do list is a great feeling. And when it comes to checking off coverage, a State Farm agent can help you choose an option that's right for you. Whether you prefer talking in person, on the phone, or using the award-winning app, it's nice knowing you have help finding coverage that best fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Some days call for working up a sweat, working on your passion, and endless action. Ditch the glitch with Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free. Refreshing flavors like strawberry kiwi and blackberry lemonade. Scientifically formulated to support physical energy, hydration, focus, mood, and social stamina. Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free. Hydrating energy. Tap the banner to learn more.
Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero. Thanks for joining in the Tour Coach. You're about to listen to part two of a roundtable discussion we had up at Bluebell Country Club outside of Philadelphia in my journey through the world of golf. My good friends, John Dunnigan, Matt Rudy, Wayne Flint, and Connor Luke, all sitting down together and just talking about golf with regular golfers and how we can help all of you play better. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Let's all get better at the game of golf together.
We don't get to teach together very often because he's in Florida a lot and I'm in Birmingham. We don't see each other all the time like we used to. But so today was fun to spend a couple hours with him down there and observe, really. I just sat there and watched. And, you know, one of the things he kept doing with this young man that I thought was great, and it's something I do with all of my high school kids and college kids, is I hold them accountable after they've done their 5-ball stacks or 10 balls or whatever it is. I hold them accountable. Well, what did that feel like? And you'd be amazed when you ask someone, they can't really ever tell you what the new stuff felt like. So I stand there and until they tell me something, and Tony did the same thing today. I mean, the young man looked at him like, well, I don't really know what it felt like, is what he looked like. And then Tony said, well, tell me, or do it again and then tell me. And he held him accountable to what the difference of feel was. And I think our students, and if you're going to try to get better on your own after some golf lessons, I think you have to hold yourself accountable. What is the difference between what I do when I swing and I don't know where the weight of the club is because I'm going 100 miles an hour and I don't know where it is back there, or versus when I get a lesson with Tony or one of us and we try to get them to stretch a rubber band and do something new that they're not used to do it slow and do it. And then say, okay, well, what was the difference? Tell me what the difference was. And then Tony's, you know, I used to always write notes all the time. It's in your book. But Tony said, I might go and type that in your phone if I were you. And he made him go right over there right then and there.
Because he wasn't going to do it.
Because he wasn't going to do it. He was just going to say something. And then tomorrow morning when he goes to hit balls, he's not going to remember what that was. So, you know, we've got these things available. I mean, they're instant note takers. I think the best players that I teach all have a little journal. They keep it in their bag, they keep a pen, and when they're done with practice session, I've moved on to my next lesson, and I'll look back and they'll be sitting down on the bench and they'll be writing in their journal what they felt and put the date on it, and here's the three things we worked on, here's what I felt, here's what I felt when I did it good, here's what I didn't feel when I didn't do it good, and they put it in their bag and move on to the next day. So I think those are some important things on how to get better.
And we're going to get another question, but also I gave another dazzling lesson today to Buddy. And it was an hour that basically fixed a lot of things by fixing his posture to dress, right? and I think folks get to play in bad. So how many people have played good for a stretch, then all of a sudden you start hitting it crappy, right? It happens all the time. And your immediate response is, something's wrong with my swing, what am I doing? And so many times, your posture's off, ball position or whatever. And so part of your practice and part of your path to getting good is to understand what your good posture and your good setup looks like and monitor it. And it change. It's hard. Like there's days you don't feel as good, your body, it's harder to get into it or whatever. So that goes along with somebody, you ask like how to structure your practice. Well, the first part of structuring your practice ought to have a way to make sure you set up correctly.
A couple of stories. So a student, a college golfer, good player, goes, "Coach, my fades are drawing." And we have something called the algorithm. You know, you go right down the list of stuff. And he didn't do it. So I'm going to teach 11 consecutive lessons now because I got to go in early. And I go in there and I said, "Okay, let's hit it." And he hits his driver left. And I go, "Boy, did you just get me away from my wife having coffee an hour early to make me come here and say that you are aiming your club face 15 degrees left out of dress? You didn't even bother to check on your setup." Then he starts hitting it good. And then it didn't matter and matter. And he says to me,
"Did you charge him double?"
"Oh, yeah." Mm-hmm. "I am so effing mad right now." I go, "Why?" Because I didn't bother to go through the steps. Well, we start going, before we even check on setup, I just had a kid who was pushing the ball off to the right, very good amateur golfer, adult. And I go, "I noticed that your golf ball is behind your zipper out of dress. Why don't we try moving that first?" And he starts flushing it. And he's mad. But you got to check your stupid stuff. It's like I teach a couple of airline pilots, kids. And their parents are up. I say, "Well, do you have a checklist you go through?" They go, "Yeah, every time." I go, "Wait, don't you skip some of them at least?" They go, "No." I said, "Why?" "People die." And I said, "Golf shots are lost. Check your stupid stuff off." We call it stupid because you guys think it doesn't count.
It does.
It counts a lot more than you think. You move the golf ball back about a half a ball in your stance on your from standard with a driver. Ball's going 40 yards right. Half a ball too far forward, it's going 40 yards left. Right? This stuff matters a ton.
Matthew?
I can tell you that I was having a conversation with Randy about Scotty one time in January. Scotty had taken a couple weeks off before the Hawaii events. And tour players are looking down at their grips. How many hours a day? Scotty's grip had turned 2 inches on the handle, and he didn't notice it. So if you think you have a shot of keeping track of all your setup variables, just, "Oh yeah, this is the way my grip looks, this is the way my stance looks." Tour players can have their hand move 2 inches on the handle and not notice it and need some kind of reference point or feedback to get it back into spec.
Do we have any other questions?
All right, so Dunnigan and I have talked for years about how doctors learn. So you use the airplane pilot thing. It's the same stories we tell in healthcare. Like doctors learn by the hour, they don't learn by the objective. So whatever the stories you're telling, that's the same world I live in. In golf, you've got Hebron, who's teaching learning science. You got Manziel and Jacobs teaching biomechanics. You've got other people teaching, Greg Rose and others teaching it's all about the body. Like, if you're a young golfer trying to figure out how to get better, and you got Eddie Fawcett teaching golf mechanic or golf course like logistics, like, which of those four things do I need to learn to be better? Or is it different for everybody?
Such a cool question. All right, well, I'm young in my career in teaching. I'm 7 years in or so. And I spent the first 2 years at a golf academy in Georgia trying to teach all the different things. And I would go and shadow different good teachers, really good teachers. And then I went and spent some time with Tony and Wayne and Jackson. And the first day I was there, I did a two-day golf school with him as a player. And the first day or second day I was there, like the way the ball would come off the face of these people, like the sound was different. And I was like, I never heard that before. And I watched him give a lesson to a pro, and then I watched him give a lesson to a 20 handicap, and like it was very similar. And what I noticed was like most of what they were doing was putting a grip on the club the right way, teaching people to aim. My first day I did putting with Wayne, all he did was teach me how to aim my putter, put my face right behind the ball, get my feet in the right spot, look at the hole, and then hit the putt. And I did that for 2 hours on the putting green, and I've been putting great ever since, honestly. But like I think all this stuff.
What's the old book?
The little red book, yeah.
Like, so that's just like fundamentals of
all the stuff is good, but like how many people are out there trying to do different things on the range that don't eat? John made a good point, like you got to check your grip. How many people don't know what their grip's supposed to look like? How many people don't know where the ball goes in your stance? How many people don't know how to aim and pick a target and actually be aimed at the target? Like, I think if you don't have a coach, that's the stuff you got to learn how to do on your own. That's the stuff.
You can't do that.
If you can't do that, why do you care about your biomechanics?
I also think.
I mean, I have a qualified response to that. I mean, Mike Jacobs is one of my best friends. I have a dog in the hunt. But I think just like medicine, there's generalists and specialists. If you have a special tumor, you got to go get someone who knows how to deal with that tumor, you get that taken care of. It doesn't, and if you went and saw that brain surgeon and asked that brain surgeon what your blood pressure would be, they would know the answer to that, but also they would know some of these other answers. So I do think there's room for specialized instruction in golf instruction. But I also think golf, just like learning how to drive, is an integrated event. There's lots of different things you need to know how to do. And you can go to driver's training and learn how to drive, or you can go to Skip Barber Racing School and learn how to drive a race car. So I think there's all kinds of different coaching for all different kinds of players, and there's integrated skills that you need to know how to do. I think you need to have a good body. You need to have a good fitness. You need to have that. If you go out and just play caveman golf and smash it all over the yard, Scott Fawcett is going to help you. If, you know, Mike Jacobs, his 3D, the stuff that he's discovering about the way, you know, the hub of the, you know, the path that your hands take around your body, and how people misunderstand that what is happening here is what's happening down at the clubhead, has fundamentally changed the way people teach. But also, if you watched him give a lesson, just like with Tony or any of the guys up here on this, you know, behind this table, the operating system that they have and the intelligence that they have about assessing problems isn't necessarily what they always communicate to each student. You know, you could go watch somebody who has a very high level of biomechanical knowledge teach a lesson that seems very simple, but the operating system running behind is using all that data that they know to make the golf lesson more simple.
I also think that the best teachers have the ability to teach all of that, right? I taught a lesson the other day, and I told the guy to not let anybody know I taught it. But I was, you know, teaching him to really swing his arms and cast the club because it's what he needed, right? I said, please don't put this on Instagram, right? I don't want to ruin my reputation. But, like, I think the best teachers, I'm not one of them, but the best teachers out there have the ability to give the student what they need. And sometimes it's within our preferences and what we would like to do. I mean, everybody knows, like, I'm a pivot guy, I teach a lot of body rotation stuff, but there's folks that won't work for, or that's not what they need, right? So I think that's kind of, you know, but like it takes a long time to get to that point. Connor and I and Wayne, we talk all the time about that. I know, like, it takes a long time to get where you can do that, right? I mean, and I don't even know that I'm worth the shit at that yet, but like we're getting there.
I think you're doing all right.
So, question? Go ahead, John. Yeah. You go ahead.
So, you can make an extreme biomechanical idea really simple. Had a student come in, and I gave him I pick things up, I put them down golf lesson. Or we're fixing a flat shoulder turn. and I just put something behind him. I said, go pick this up and throw it up in the air. And we did it a handful of times to, like when Tony's using bands, and I use bands as well, he's using something called proprioceptive priming. We're priming the feel, right? We might even intensify the feel, turn up the amp.
That's not how we say it in Alabama.
No, no. I, unfortunately, my partner in crime is a motor learning specialist, so I have to use the right term. He would get mad at me. So you prime that, and then we go, okay, now put a club in, and I want you to do the same feel. So we prime the feel, we do the same feel, and he makes a couple of swings, and I show him, I think, the second swing on video. I go, look at that. And he tells me all the stuff that he was working on. I go, well, do you see the hip depth that you were talking about? He goes, it's there. I go, do we get that for free? He goes, yes. Because, you know, our specialty is to key on this thing is causing the rest of it to break down. That's what we do for a living. Right. We pick the right thing, but we're anticipating the whole biomechanical chain of events that goes through that. And if let's say that you can't make a full shoulder turn, we can address your setup. We can change your setup to rotate you more at address, pull the foot back, let your hips turn. There's so many different ways, but you start with, I need my golf club to do this better. Now, then my body is interfering with this. What can I alter with the body, right? And when I'm talking about, I never talk about body parts. Except I'll say, McGarren, with that hot body of yours, you might have to turn your shirt buttons back toward the away from the target on the back. Somewhere. I usually reference things that are not directly body parts that influence the body part to move.
So I think that Brian brought up the healthcare industry, right? Probably the thing that doctors hate the most is WebMD, right?
Mm-hmm.
And quick so fixes. Have you guys, has it been, have you noticed that it's helped your business or hurt your business that people, your students maybe,
they watch videos.
They're online, they're watching videos and they see this and they're like, oh, I'm not doing that. I'm the king of it, and I'll share them with Bud a lot of times. I'll say, what do you think about this? And he'll say to me, Dad, that guy, I know that guy. He's some 5 handicap somewhere. Don't listen to him. But people probably do that a lot. I'm just curious if that has impacted your business positively or negatively.
Yeah, there's good and bad too. Is the question more like, does Instagram and YouTube help you?
Do people change? You talk about the structure. You get there, you've got to go through your checklist. And now I watch some guy doing something online, and I hear what he says, and now I change my focus to that as opposed to my checklist.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's good. I think it goes back to what Tony said at the beginning, is sticking with your thing over a long period of time, and maybe sticking with one person. But then there's part, like, it all goes together, but you also have to try stuff and fail at it to figure out what works, and you got to try stuff that works and then figure out if something else, like, yeah, it's the big
and
bucket
Connor,
of golf.
See if you actually did what you were trying to do. You actually try?
Never. I'll take videos of myself. I'm like, no, I didn't accomplish that. I didn't accomplish that at all. But it still will make me think, and it does get me off of center. It gets me off of my checklist.
I think social media has made it harder to keep people on their program, because you can't help it. Like, I mean, I fly every week or whatever. Like, I'm as guilty as anybody, just scrolling through. You're going to see shit, and you're going to be like, I mean, what's...
Victor Hovland.
Right, like Victor Hovland, right? So I guess you could say it's helped us in the fact that there's more people more screwed up, and they got to go find people that have success.
Making us rich.
Right, you look at it that way. You know, I've made an effort... One reason Matt's here, like, I've made an effort to grow our content that we put out on our YouTube, and I've tried to do it by putting us teaching real students. Case study real students. So you could say, hey, that guy kind of looks like me, and he's kind of got the same problem. Let me see what they're doing. Versus a teacher just standing there giving you what they think, right? But I think, like, you know, my old mentor, he had a saying that, like, everything, he said that, you know, stuff online was like if you went into a drugstore and you took one of everything in there on the shelf, you'd probably die.
It's poison.
Right? But everything in that drugstore could help you if it's what you're, what you need. And I think golf instruction online is the same. I mean, I don't know that you could die. I don't know. You probably could. I've seen some of that shit. But, like, if you not, if it's not what you need, it's going to make you worse. And I think that's our job. I don't know that it's, you know, everybody will come to you and say, what about so-and-so stuff? Like, yeah, I mean, that's good if that's what you need, right? And I think that's our job is to decipher. Any more questions? Bud, that was good. Way to come out with that one. Made us think a little.
So if I only have 20 minutes before I'm going out to play around golf, what do I practice?
What? Have a beer.
Calibration. Beer? You calibrate the club face to path to get your ball curving in one direction. Don't bother trying to improve your swing. You got 20 minutes.
Leg button.
All right, Wayne, tell Bud what to do. I'm going to tell him here in a minute.
Well, I would definitely chip and putt because, you know, you're coming in hot. You may not hit it perfect first few holes. So, you know, I'd definitely pay attention to that. I would definitely hit, you know, that when you talk about playing golf, you go play golf to shoot a score. You don't play golf to make great golf swings. You know, you try to learn to make great golf swings while you're practicing and getting better. When you go play golf, you hit shots that you know you can hit. You hit clubs that are very comfortable for you. I mean, you don't have to hit a driver off the deck. You can hit a hybrid sometimes, you know. And, you know, you hit shots that you know you can hit, and you hit to targets that are friendly. You know, you don't want to hit the real tight pins all the time. I mean, and if there's going to be a miss, you understand what your misses are and which way your ball is going to curve. That's what John's telling you. Figure out which way the ball is going to be curving that day, and then play around the golf that way. I mean, again, it's all about getting the ball in the hole. You know, turn a five into a four into a three into a two. That's the name of the game. Don't make big numbers. So friendly clubs, friendly targets, and, you know, maybe pay attention to rhythm and balance. Those are a couple nice little fundamentals that you could think about while you're playing golf that aren't too mentally evasive, you know. I mean, where they mess you all up and you don't know where your right elbow is or whatever the case may be. Hey, I want to swing in rhythm. I want to stay in balance. See how I hit this ball. Try and hit solid all the way around.
I mean, and like Buddy could just try to get in good posture for every shot. All right. Any more questions? One or two more questions?
Yes.
Go ahead, man.
Go ahead.
All right. So I would start by saying I'm not a good golfer, and I'm also not an unrealistic parent. That range from age from 33 to 12. We're told a 12-year-old is, I'll use the words loosely by saying, has potential.
Okay.
What advice do you have to offer to a parent as it relates to placing our child on a trajectory to have the opportunity to play Division XII?
I'm going to give you three huge ones. Fun. Fun.
Beyond that, go to the next thing. It's fun.
You sure it's fun? Has he started playing?
It's fun.
He loves it. Has he started playing tournaments?
Yes.
Right.
He beat me by like 7 up last
year. Beautiful. What do you say to him after a tournament round?
What do I say?
Yeah. Or your.
Did you have fun?
Did you have fun?
Yes.
What did you learn? What can you do better? Where are we going next time? And that's it. And it's life.
Right. You're already doing it right. You're already doing it right. That's really, really good. I don't get that. I get a lot more of, what about that shot on 8? That was atrocious. Now, with my own.
I'm a helicopter parent, and I wouldn't know to ask those questions.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about that.
Right. So with my own daughter, who got quite good at golf, very, very fast, she would want me to critique her. And I would say, yo, that shot, do you see that shot? That was sick. I would only go over the shots she hit the best that day. I would know, I would go back the next practice in order to work on the stuff that wasn't so good, but I never talked about the bad shots. You know, and I think that's really important. I would let them play a lot of sports until about the age of 14 or 15.
Yeah.
If you want them to get recruited, yeah, if you want them to get recruited at some point.
So her son and Kaysen will both be college golfers, and they both love the game.
Good.
So it's more about like what happens between their freshman year and their senior year in high school.
In high school.
Go on social media and search what Scotty Scheffler or what Colby does. The fitness component is an enormous component for getting ready for college golf.
Fitness.
Being a strong elite athlete. Forget about being a golfer, but having the golf background, but also being an elite athlete and training appropriately for golf, being a big, strong, speed generating player. I mean, that doesn't take any kind of golf knowledge. It takes a dedicated fitness program. That's an enormous.
I think so. We've been lucky and had a bunch of juniors get decent. And what I've tried to do is to surround them 4, 5, 6 times a year with as many people that are great at what they do, right? Like, I try to bring all my kids to, they're around great fitness people. I try to surround them with mental and performance coaches. They don't need them all the time, but when they need them, they need to be exposed to it so they have access to it. And then I bring all of my players 4 or 5 times a year, and I have tour players. I'm lucky because I have tour players, but I make them play with tour players. But I would try to get them to play with as many players that are better than them as they can. And I would expose them to mental and performance people. I'd expose them to fitness and physical people. And that doesn't mean go get some big program, but like let somebody teach them a few things about that, right? And then their curiosity will help them lead them towards like which things they need more of. But I think to get to D1 and high level D1, they've got to be exposed, and they have to have all pieces of the puzzle.
They have to be fast. They have to have speed.
They have to have speed.
You have to have speed. D1 player, you have to have speed.
Yeah.
How old is he now?
12.
All right. He's just about ready to start working on some speed. Doesn't need weights necessarily, but about ready to be working on making the thing move fast.
Yeah, agree.
I think a D1 player is going to need 150 miles.
Yeah, you're going to need speed. You know, but I think if you teach them, you know, you build a good golf swing, and then you get them with the right physical people where then they're able to do that golf swing bigger, faster, stronger, and they have the right mobility and stability and strength and all that, then they'll be fine. I would surround them with the right tools and then let them decide. Go ahead.
So as you're navigating this, so you'll start out with a certain level of golf tournament, right? I think maybe this is more of what you're talking about. And it might be the Philly Junior Tour.
Yep.
It might be the Hurricane Tour after that. Another couple of years, he'll start doing some of the previews for the AJGA. He's going to have to. You will be traveling. My daughter was up and down the whole East Coast playing golf. Good luck. It was during COVID, so she could do online school. That helped. When you're playing, though, the thing is, you have to keep stressing, regardless of how well he scores, it's get better. Mm-hmm. Right? It's the relentless pursuit of excellence. Keep having fun while you're doing it. And what happens is, how old are you, young man?
17.
You're at the age of choking your balls off, right? Because every time you hit a golf ball,
technical term.
Every time you hit a golf ball,
you don't really lose your balls.
You don't talk about body parts.
No. Oh, no body parts. No. When you're playing golf, you're playing for the coaches. You know, you're turning your head back to see college coaches watch you, and you can't give into that. You can't control your thoughts, right? I like to say control. Thoughts are like farts. They just kind of pop up out of nowhere, right? But you can take control. Okay, yes, I have an opportunity to do something really special here. Now, what do I have to do right now? We call it win every shot. What's important right now is I got to get this ball in the fairway. Now, see this move right here? That's the one that gets in the fairway more often than not. Nothing works all the time. You have to keep yourself on task. We have a great sports psych in the world right now. Raymond Pryor talks about being on time, and on task. He says on target, but I call it on task. If you can do that, you can keep yourself moving forward even when you're feeling so-called pressure, right? When you're starting to think about your outcome, like you've been under par maybe, right? And you get your 2 or 3 under par and all of a sudden you start going, oh man, I hope I don't blow this. You're off time, you're in the future. And you have to talk yourself back to, okay, what's important right now is this shot. It's not the next shot, it's the shot you're on. You do that relentlessly throughout your college career, you can continue to get better. But as soon as you start to worry about how good you are, rather than where you want to be, you stop trying to get better, right? We're worried about, why am I not better? Instead of, let's do the things that get you better. If you keep doing that, you keep making progress. This is what we do. I do this all day. It's very hard to keep people's minds straight. But if you do that, you'll get better.
Correct.
I do think these guys can vouch for the fact that one thing that you don't hear often talked about is what college coaches are looking for. There are a lot of players that can play well. But if you're a jerk, if you mouth off to other players, if you mouth off to your parents, if you make a bad score and you sulk for 2 or 3 holes, those are automatic disqualifiers for a lot of college coaches because they can select for great skills and select for a growth mindset. They want to see a player who shoots 42 on the front nine and still has a positive attitude and shoots 32 on the back nine. And if they watch somebody make an eagle and 4 birdies and then tank it in the last 3 holes and then hit the bag and sulk after the round and not talk to anybody, that is a much bigger red flag than a little bit too little speed or something like that. And I can't tell you the number of conversations I've had with coaches where they say, this was a disqualifier for me because the kid's just a jerk. I don't want him in my clubhouse, so to speak. I'm trying to build a team and have people that want to be with each other, and that fit is a really big piece.
Helicopter parents, too. No helicopter parents.
I tell people all the time that I think college coaches look at...
Hold on one second.
They see so many great players, Division I guys, the upper level. They see so many great players all around the country. And anybody can play good when they're playing good, right? It's easy. We've all played good at times. It's easy. They're looking for those guys that can play good when they're not playing good and can handle adversity with class and dignity and not be bending banging their clubs on the legs of their bag and all that stuff. They don't want to see that because that's a deal killer for the team. I mean, that's a destructive guy once they get him on the team or gal. And so they're looking to see who can handle adversity with some class and represent their program and all that stuff. They're looking for grades. They're looking for all that stuff. But I think, having the mental wherewithal to get through a tough time and not fold up the tent and give up, they don't like that at all. Because they can't take that kid if he's the 5 guy on the team, because they may need the 5 guy. They can't take a guy who's going to fold it up after playing bad for 4 or 5 holes and say, today's not my day. I mean, they need everybody playing good when they're going to these tournaments. So